Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at CedarPoint.com.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And my name is Christian Sager. Hey, Robert, would you read a book if you knew that it was bound in human skin?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
Because what if it was bound in my skin?
Well, I'd feel even more weird about it.
Yeah.
because I like to take care of my books and be respectful to my physical books as much as possible.
Sure.
And, if it's a really nice book, there's a lot of pressure, right? You don't want to bend that fancy cover. You don't want to just leave it sitting around.
Right.
And if it's bound in human flesh, I feel like I've got to go above and beyond. I've got to get a special, I've got to get a special jacket for it. I've got to perhaps put moisturizer on it. I don't know all the rules because I don't have any books bound in human flesh.
One of the things that I heard and read during our research for the episode that we are about to conduct was that apparently human skin is like any other leather bound book. As long as you just keep it at like a moderate temperature, should be okay. And for the most part, the libraries and archives that have them, you know, they have them obviously. They're in special collections. They're kept away. They're behind glass or they're, you know, in boxes somewhere, but they don't need like any special, I don't know. It's not like you need human skin spray to wipe down your book with, right?
Yeah. Cause it basically comes down to the reality that human hide is just another hide.
Yeah.
Granted, it's one that has a lot of personal, value attached to it and a lot of taboo, energy, associated with its use. But it's ultimately not that different from any other animal skin.
Yeah, really it isn't. And so we're going to talk about this today because there's a weird history behind it, but also there's a new science that's popped up in the last 2 years to confirm whether or not a book is actually bound in human skin. And you may be sitting out there listening to this and saying, surely that's not really a thing. And, you know, we've all heard of these kinds of books in horror movies or something, right? Like the one that I immediately think of is the Necronomicon Ex Mortis from Evil Dead, infamously bound in human skin. But what others?
Well, this one's interesting. Because, of course, you know, it's very much bound in human skin in the Evil Dead movies.
Yeah.
But the Necronomicon, as it originally appears in H.P. Lovecraft's writings,
right,
I don't believe was ever mentioned as being bound in human flesh.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
In fact, there's only one reference I could find. Maybe some other Lovecraft readers out there can correct us. But the only story I found where he makes a reference to a book bound in human skin is his 1924 story, The Hound, that includes this description of kind of an occult stash. Statues and paintings there were, all of fiendish subjects, and some executed by St. John and myself. A locked portfolio bound in tanned human skin held certain unknown and unnameable drawings, which it was rumored Goya had perpetrated but dared not acknowledge. So there's one reference to a book bound in human skin, but for the most part, like it's something that turns up in horror fiction sometimes. In Stephen King's Eyes, the Eyes of the Dragon, the flag character reads from a book of that's bound in human skin. It's implied that this might be the Necronomicon.
Okay.
But for the most part, I couldn't run across any specific examples of like old school horror fiction and weird fiction that had much in the way of human flesh bound books.
I couldn't either. The only one that popped into my head, and I couldn't confirm it by quickly looking up this movie, was The Ninth Gate. Do you remember that Roman Polanski movie
with
Johnny Depp? And he was like traveling around the world to get, I think there were three copies that he had to confirm if they were real or not, that were these books that you basically used to summon a portal to hell.
Yes, you're speaking of The Book of the Nine Gates to the Kingdom of Shadows.
Ah, okay.
The book that this was based on was The Club Dumas by Arturo Perez Reverta.
And, yeah.
I read this many years ago, so I've forgotten most of it, but I remember it being pretty fun. I looked back in it a little bit for this episode, and it appears that in the book, at least, it was bound in 17th century Venetian binding.
Oh, okay.
And there were three copies of this 1666 demonology text.
1666, very nice.
It was a good year for demonology texts. But three of copies survived the Inquisition, and in the story, two of those copies contain elaborate forgeries, so you only have one volume that'll actually work. The others, if you try and follow the various demonic summoning, consulting, spells, you're gonna do it wrong and you might die.
Yeah, that's an interesting little movie. I've heard the books are much better too, but the movie, it's not a great movie, but I weirdly come back to it every couple of years.
No, I have to say that the book might be bound in human flesh in the movie, because I know that the movie kind of played up some more of the demonic and horror themes.
Yeah.
Whereas the book kind of kept a distance from some of that stuff, but the movie's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got that scene with the woman in the wheelchair. That's what I always think of when I think of that movie.
I don't remember that at all.
She's dying, and she's just kind of like flailing around in like one of those powered wheelchairs. It's pretty brutal to watch. Huh. Yeah. Anyways, so speaking of brutal, how about some books bound in human skin, or just skinning humans?
Yeah, because that's really where we have to come back to. But before we get into the utilization of human flesh in bookbinding, we have to go back even further. We have to go back far before we were binding books at all, and just talk about, well, what's the history of just pulling flesh off of people?
Do you want to share a fun fact with our audience we learned when we were putting the notes together for this?
Yeah, so if you see this phase of Stuff to Blow Your Mind as phase three, which I guess I'm now thinking of it as phase four is when we're all robots.
Yeah,
but this is technically the fifth episode of the podcast to discuss human flaying. We have Jeff the Killer episode, the incomplete unfinished episode, the Mandela episode, the Human Remains episode, and Cobra Effect and the Horrors of Scalp Hunting.
And don't forget mind flayers. They don't flay skin, but they flay brains.
I forgot about that. There is at least the word flaying.
Yeah. So it's 5.5.
Yeah. So the flaying of humans, as barbaric as it is, has been around for quite some time. I was looking at one particular text, when we were researching this, and this is an older publication, but it was from Lawrence S. Thompson, writing for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in 1946. He has this whole paper, this whole chapter, Tanned Human Skin. And he says that the mere tanning of human hides obviously goes back much further than bookbinding. For instance, Herodotus wrote about the Scythians and their cultivation of this art, if you will. In Saxon Britain, certain offenders could pay hide geld for their crimes. So I guess that would be, you know, essentially paying
So you would still be alive, but you would give parts of your skin, or it would be like a, I'm going to be executed, but in payment, you will be able to take my skin.
I'm not certain on this, because on one hand, I'm wondering if it means that you would pay a little actual geld, so your hide would not be taken.
Oh, there
or
you go.
If it's
okay.
Kind of a, you know, you're basically paying for your crimes with a piece of your skin.
Mm.
Also, he also mentions that Danes who committed sacrilege in churches, could be flayed and their skins nailed to church doors, which seems a little sacrilegious to put a human skin on a church door. It seems like you're punishing the crime with another crime.
Right.
But that's just my modern sensibilities, I guess.
Well, and that's what we're going to learn in this episode, too, is that a lot of this comes down to what is taboo nowadays versus what was 200 years ago, 300 years ago, and further back. Really, we're talking about the medieval and Renaissance period when this was at its height. But
yeah,
the last recorded one was in the late 19th century.
Yeah. And then one of the things, too, about human flaying in general is that, yes, it undoubtedly has happened. And it has been the practice of different cultures at different times. But on the other hand, it is hard work. It's grisly work. And sometimes just the idea of it taking place picks up steam and becomes part of the myth, whereas it might not have actually happened. Like, for instance, there's a legend of Jan Žižka, the Hussite military commander, and apparently the legend is that his dying wish was that drums be made from his skin so that he could continue to lead his troops in battle in some fashion. And, you know, who knows if there's any truth to that at all, but the story certainly resonated with everyone.
And that's kind of part of what this new scientific practice is all about, because there's so many stories and legends about, oh, this book is bound in human skin, and, you know, you can't really tell at first glance, and we're going to talk about why. But turns out, like, a lot of these old archives, when you actually test their books, they don't always turn up as actually being made of human skin. Sometimes they're just sheepskin or lambskin or cow or deer or something.
Right. I mean, in some of these accounts, even books that definitely are made of human skin, they have been described as looking like they're made from pigskin.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. So much of it is just your expectation of, and your, you know, what you're thinking about is the story regarding this
I think
book.
It definitely has to do with the tanning process, too, as we go mm-hmm. through some of the examples throughout this episode, too. Like, some of them, you look at them and you go, oh, that's a part of a human being, and others, you have no idea. So then, you know, I'm assuming, like myself, many of you out there might not actually be familiar with the process of tanning. And tanning human hides is essentially similar to how you would tan other hides, but let's go through it real quick. So there's many types of books in particular that are bound in human skin. It can include prayer books, astronomy treatises, and court cases, and then definitely anatomy texts, which strikes me as being very meta, very wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But the official name for this type of book binding is called anthropodermic bibliopegy, or pagey. It was mostly done in the 17th and 18th centuries, and it was primarily by physicians to bind their anatomy texts. And in these cases, it was usually human skin that was claimed from medical cadavers or criminals that were sentenced to death. But sometimes their skin was also used to bind the record of their trials as a form of punishment after death. And we'll explain why in some of the examples. It was supposedly, this is a rumor, I think, popular during the French Revolution, where there was, quote unquote, a fresh supply of bodies available.
Yeah, I was actually reading about the French Revolution tie-in, and apparently royalist propaganda from the time claimed that that revolutionary leather goods were generated by a human leather tannery.
Okay.
There was one place in particular, I think in Meudon, M-E-U-D-O-N. I'm not that great with the
me
French.
Either.
but yeah, that was the propaganda going around. Oh, these revolutionaries, all of their leather comes from human flesh.
Okay. Well, you know, we're going to have an example coming up that is of a Marquis de Sade book. So maybe, and that was right around that time-ish. So maybe that's possible. It turns out, too, that sometimes these books were bound in human skin out of affection for the author. Now,
oh yeah, there's at least one interesting account of
Yeah, this is not necessarily that they've taken the author's skin and bound his book in it, although I think that might have happened too, but more often that you send your skin to your favorite author after you die. you've paid ahead of time for the shipping. Maybe you use stamps.com to send your human skin.
I could understand that. I mean, I feel like a lot of us are reading ongoing series.
Yeah.
And the idea of dying before the author finishes that series can be a little troubling.
Right.
So I could see like sending a piece of your skin to say George R. R. Martin
or, exactly,
or yeah. Scott Baker or somebody and saying, look, I'm not going to survive to read your book, but if you could maybe, if I could be there in some fashion.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how it went down. But yeah, I mean, essentially what you do is you cure an animal's skin when you're tanning. You do it by soaking it in salt and then in water, and then you treat it with various chemicals that soften it up and keep it from decomposing. In some cases, and in some of the human cases we're going to talk about, urine is used.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, because like we said, human skin is just another animal hide. And there are accounts of tanners using human skin in book bindings. And in these cases, you can compare many of the cuts of human hide to pig hide.
Right.
The pores, hair, and in some cases, the nipples can be telling.
Yes.
But can it also just be easy to look at it and think it's just any other type of leather?
Not something I ever really thought about before with just, leather working in general is mm-hmm. like, what do they do about the animal nipples? You know, like if I have a belt or I have shoes or whatever, like, do they just cut around the nipples?
Well,
what do they do with the nipple parts?
It's interesting that this would be.
Pigs have a lot of nipples.
Yeah, they do. They have quite a number of them.
Yeah.
It seems like with actual leather work, there's going to be a tendency to remove all aspects of the creature. You don't want to be reminded that this came from an animal. But in many of these cases of human hide use, there is a deliberate effort to make it resemble a person in some way, shape, or form.
There's even one where there's an impression of the person's face.
Oh,
yeah.
See?
Grizzly. But that's like so Necronomicon.
Yeah.
That's a new show on the ABC Family. So Necronomicon.
Now, Lawrence S. Thompson in the writing that I mentioned. He writes about several non-bookbinding uses of human skin from from this time period, ranging from slippers to an alleged coin purse made from a human scrotum.
Okay.
That was employed by a burlesque dancer. Honestly, I'm not sure how much I buy that because symbolism aside, who really wants to lug around a scrotum, you know?
Yeah, it seems like a lot of work, but it also seems like maybe it's like some kind of symbolic victory over like if she's a burlesque dancer, maybe it was like it belonged to somebody who had wronged her.
Yeah, I mean, the story of it makes sense. But at the end of the day, you're left with what sounds like a pretty ugly coin purse.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess with any of these things, if it's made in a way to look like it was manufactured from a human body.
Right.
The appeal is going to wear off with most collectors pretty fast.
Yeah.
That's my two cents on it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. You're not that wrong. So why don't we take a quick break? And when we come back, we're going to give you just a pile of examples to show you how real this is.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 a month, every month. Taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Okay, we're back. So let's talk about some notable books that were bound in human flesh, and why were they?
All right. And before we get into them, I just want to drive home again the time frame we're looking at. So according to The Late Age of Print, Everyday Book Culture from Consumerism to Control by Ted Streifus, the binding of books in human flesh persisted as a practice from basically the late 18th century to, and he argues, the conclusion of the Second World War.
Huh. Okay.
Now, he's largely alluding to the allegations that the Nazi doctors used flesh in the construction of lampshades.
Oh, right. Yeah. This came up a lot in the literature and was kind of – most of the writers who were focusing on the bookbinding were like, the lampshade thing is unconfirmed.
Yeah. And more importantly, it's not a book. Like,
right.
Just to be very specific, they're referring to a lampshade is not a bookbinding.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that exact timeline can really be trusted, but you could basically say that was probably the last time someone could have really gotten away with it in the the sort of learned academic sense of it.
Well, Buffalo Bill too.
Yeah. And also, as we'll discuss at the very end, there are examples of modern flesh usage in various art projects, construction of tennis shoes made from human flesh, that sort of thing. If you follow the kind of social media feeds we do, you probably have seen examples of
this. I feel like I shared this on Stuff to Blow Your Mind at one point, but there was this artist who made these shoes with human teeth.
Yeah, that's the one I'm thinking.
Yeah. Those were really bizarre, but also, you know, for us and for most of our listeners, kind of cool to look at.
Yeah, there was a recent art project where someone was planning to take skin samples from the late fashion designer Alexander McQueen.
Oh, right. Yeah,
we talked about that into a jacket.
Yeah.
So, but even that's you're talking about cloning. It's a modern spin on this older method of bookbinding, of utilizing human flesh in some sort of quote unquote practical sense.
So, before I get into this, I want to note that one of my sources was from a blog by a woman named Dr. Lindsay Fitzharris. And she's a medical historian who specializes in the history of early surgery. And it's a fascinating blog. So if you like, this is the kind of thing you're interested in and you like what you're hearing here, you might want to go check it out because she's got just lots of entries on things like this. But let's start with Father Henry Garnet. Apparently, he was a conspirator as part of the 1605 gunpowder plot. Many of you will know this as now being memorialized as Guy Fawkes Day. He conspired to blow up the Houses of Parliament in England, and his 1606 record of his offenses is bound in his skin. And this is the title of the book: A True and Perfect Relation of the Whole Proceedings Against the Late Most Barbarous Traitors, Garnet, a Jesuit, and His Confederates. Now, this is, you know, if you're one of our British listeners, you're probably well familiar with this. But for our other listeners, this is why Great Britain celebrates the 5th of November as Guy Fawkes Day. It's mostly popularized over here from Alan Moore and David Lloyd's V for Vendetta, which was made into a movie a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. So you occasionally see folks wearing Guy Fawkes masks here, but it's really like V for Vendetta masks for them. Garnet himself actually wasn't active in the plot to do this, but he knew of it. And so he was hung, and then he was drawn and quartered before his skin was removed. Now, one copy of this book, this is the one I was talking about, has been found with an impression of his face on the front cover.
Oh.
And it went for $11,000 at an auction in 2007. That doesn't seem like that much to me. I don't know. I guess I'm not really in on the pricings of rare books, especially like human skin books, but 11,000 seems kind of low. Like, it's less than a car.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess it's going to be awkward to read that book because if you're on the train with it, people are going to be staring at the face.
You're like, do you hold the nose when you've got the front cover open in your lap?
If it's a big book, do I want to even put it in my lap? If it's got somebody's face on it, I don't know.
And you're just reading like 1600s legal records.
Yeah. It's ultimately a boring book.
But the next one that we should talk about, and this is the fan one, is I like to call it the French Countess. This is the fan. So she was a big fan of occultist astronomer Camille Flammarion, and she sent a strip of skin from her shoulders to him after she died from tuberculosis. And then he used it to bind a copy of a book on the description of the planets in our solar system.
Yeah, this was fascinating. Again, this comes back to this idea that, hey, I'm not going to be around for your next book. I love your work.
Yeah.
Can you bind your next book in my skin? And he did. This is the kind of thing, if it happened today, it would be in all the headlines, right?
Yeah.
And even at the time, people were asking questions. They're like, whoa, tell me more about this. And so Flammarion ended up responding to one of these questions. And I have the letter that he wrote in response here.
Oh, okay.
He says, "My dear doctor, the story has been somewhat expanded. I don't know the name of the person whose dorsal skin was delivered to me by a physician to use for binding. It was a matter of carrying out a pious vow. Some newspapers, especially in America, published the portrait, the name, and even the photograph of the chateau where the quote-unquote countess lived. All of that is pure invention. The binding was successfully executed by Engel, and from then on, the skin was inalterable. I remember I had to carry this relic to a tanner in the Rue de la Renée Blanche, and 3 months were necessary for the job. Such an idea is assuredly bizarre. However, in point of fact, the fragment of a beautiful body is all that survives of it today, and it can endure for centuries in a perfect state of respectful preservation. The desire of the unknown woman was to have my last book published at the time of her death, bound in this skin. The octavo edition of the Terres du Ciel, published by Didier, enjoys this honor. Your reader and admirer, Flammarion.
So I didn't do a deep dive into Flammarion. He might be somebody we want to come back to at a later date because he reminds me of John Dee. but apparently, like, when he was around, he was known as sort of a, crank isn't really the right term, but he had like a lot of predictions based on like, his observations of astronomy. And I think one of them was something like Halley's Comet was going to crash into Earth and kill everybody or something like that. Like he had like a lot of like kind of apocalyptic, you know, scare tactics.
Yeah. I don't know a lot about him either, but I do know this. He believed that it was perfectly reasonable to use a woman's skin to bind the book.
Yeah, I mean, woman whose name he didn't know.
Yeah, I mean, he makes kind of an interesting argument. He's saying, look, beautiful woman, she's dead. She would just be forgotten. Now she gets to live on as part of this forever.
Yeah, yeah. as long as the planets.
Yeah. So I don't know.
All right.
But so, it is interesting to hear the author's take on this a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. I can't believe you're able to dig that up. That's pretty cool. So here's the Marquis de Sade book that I was mentioning earlier. If you're familiar with his work, it's copies of his work, Justine. So medical interns apparently supplied the breasts of deceased female patients to an English binder of erotica in the 19th century to bind copies of Justine. And this is so obviously more than one copy of Justine. And in one example, there is an intact nipple on the cover, and the research article that I read about this had a picture of it. But that seems weirdly fitting for the Marquis de Sade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was reading about this as well. Apparently, you were able to uncover actual photographs of this.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the way I saw it described was that the Goncourt brothers, who were French writers of the time, that they were kind of gossiped that interns in this place, the Calmer, were dismissed because of the delivered skin from breasts of female patients to the binder of obscene books in Faubourg Saint-Germain.
Okay.
And then publisher Isidore Lezou claimed to have seen the 1793 volume that you've described here.
Well, you know, this could be one of those examples where this is legend. I mean, of course, like, so Marquis de Sade is infamous. Mm-hmm. Of course, like, if you really want to, like mark up the value on your Marquis de Sade book, you say, oh yeah, this just happens to be made from the skin of a mental patient's breasts. Oh no, they weren't mental patients. They were just deceased patients. The mental patients come later. But you know what I'm saying? Like this would be one that would be great to test if they could ever, get it over to this team of scientists that we'll talk about later.
Indeed. Now at this point, a number of our American listeners are probably thinking, oh man, Europeans of this time period were just kind of awful.
Yeah.
Americans would never engage in this sort of, bizarre, book collecting, grotesquerie.
Not true. We've got James Allen, who went by the alias George Walton, and he was from my home state, Massachusetts, or at least that's where he died. He was a 19th century criminal who willingly donated his skin after he tried to rob a man on the Mass Turnpike. His victim fended him off. So Allen, when he was captured, requested that his skin be used to bind a book of his crimes that was given to his victim as a, quote, token of his esteem. And this is on display at the Boston Athenaeum Library. Another book from his skin went to his doctor, apparently. So he had enough left over. He just said, give some here, a little bit here.
I hope everyone is real. Like the big message that I got from the research was just how normalized.
Yeah.
This was, granted, not among everybody, but in certain circles, it was the kind of thing where you get arrested and be like, oh yeah, I want my skin to bind this book and that book. Like today, no one would do that. You would just be considered a complete wacko. But I mean, maybe you were considered a wacko at the time, but you were considered an acceptable kind of wacko.
Yeah, an eccentric.
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of wonder, if any of our pathologist friends are out there listening, if you are used to dealing with the dead and you're handling them and you're opening them up and you're doing autopsies, you know, I wonder how much further down the road it really is to take the skin off. I mean, the tanning process seems to be the hardest part about that, although I've never actually removed somebody's skin, but mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? I think like once you've already gone down the path of being someone who conducts autopsies on a regular basis and you're just sort of used to the dead human body being an object and not a person.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not that far removed to say like, well, we might as well get some use out of this.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think that's a perfectly valid point here because, yeah, you're either going to be a tanner who's engaging with the hides all the time, or you were a doctor who's dissecting criminals and deceased patients.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. This is a famous example, but also a good example to give us an idea of why these were conducted the way they were. And it is Burke's Skin Pocketbook. This is the notorious Scottish murderer who committed his crimes between 1827 and 1828 with his associate Hare. So Burke and Hare. I think that's a movie, right?
Yeah, there was a Simon Pegg movie.
Simon Pegg and Gollum?
Yeah, Simon Pegg and Gollum. I haven't seen it.
What's Gollum's real name? I feel bad.
Andy Serkis.
Andy Serkis, yeah. Those guys played these characters. I wonder if in that movie version they show the book at the end. But so these two killed 16 people, and the reason why was to sell their bodies to an anatomist. Burke was hung and then dissected, and his skin now binds a book at the Surgeons Hall Museum in Edinburgh. This book is described as being dark brown, almost black, and honestly, it's not really a book. It's really kind of a wallet for personal notes and money. There's no paper between it. And why was this done? We're starting to see a pattern here, right? Well, apparently there was a law called England's Murder Act of 1751, and this stipulated that not only would a murderer be executed, but they couldn't be buried. So they were like, well, what are we going to do with all these bodies? So what they would do is they would usually dissect them sometimes in public, you know, as kind of a lecture hall series or something like that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they hung the bodies in chains, but some, like Burke, were made into book covers. So there you go. Another one of these that's kind of similar is at the Bristol Record Office. There's a book there that accounts the first man to be hung at Bristol Gaol. I think that's how you pronounce it. I guess over here we'd call it gallows. It's a guy named John Horwood. Now, the story goes Horwood was 18 years old and he was infatuated with a woman named Eliza Balsam. And he threw a stone at her while she was fetching water. And then he, quote, beat her skull to pieces. Ditto, same as Burke. He was dissected during a public lecture. And then his skin bound the papers about the case. So that's another place where apparently you can see some of these. Now here, this next example is one of the most disturbing for me. And it's right here in the US of A, and you can, in fact, see these books at the Mutter Museum. The Mary Lynch books, as they're called. So Mary Lynch was a 28-year-old woman who died from tuberculosis and parasitic infection trichinosis in 1868. She'd been in this hospital care facility for 6 months. And the physician who did her autopsy needed to rebind his trio of anatomical texts on human reproduction. That's how the story is first portrayed. But then I read multiple articles about this and got the full story. So basically what he did was he's conducting her autopsy. He takes a section of skin from her thigh. Then he tans it in the hospital basement. But he didn't at first repurpose it for these book covers. Mary apparently only weighed 60 pounds at the time of her death. It was apparently a gruesome affair. He tanned her skin using a bedpan, and they think it might have been filled with human urine instead of the usual, salt and chemicals that were used. And they say this would have taken 2 weeks to a month. This guy was only 23 years old at the time. But wait. He holds on to her skin until 1887, so 19 years later. He decides, I'm going to bind these anatomy books up. And the three volumes are now in the Mutter Museum. Some speculate that the treatment like this shows an example of how doctors at the time saw themselves as being social superiors to their poorer patients. And he also published her autopsy in the 1869 issue of the American Journal of Medical Sciences. And apparently it included this very gruesome graphic that depicted the number of parasites that were in her body during the autopsy. So this just sounds, this sounds very morbid.
Yeah, there is this sense, you do get a strong sense of physicians here who have a godlike complex about their powers over the human body. And certainly, to your point, their social superiority to the poorer patients.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the kind of thing that, like, it's funny because, like, that's a stereotype I think of when I think of, like, the 19th century medical man, you know? But that's mainly from entertainment. You know, I'm thinking of, like, I don't know, Penny Dreadful, right? Like Dr. Frankenstein on Penny Dreadful, or like characters and stuff like Deadwood or something like that, right? Like doctors just were a little quirky back then. At least that's what our fiction tells us. But then we look at examples like this.
Yeah. Well, one of the things is our entertainment, of course we want our doctors quirky.
Yeah.
If I'm going to watch, you know, 16 hours about this doctor, he or she better be quirky. You know, that's one of the reasons I love shows like The Nick.
I was going to mention
Dr. Thackeray and that very quirky doctor.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want it any other way. But then you look in the histories and you do find these real, eccentric, spirits in the medical profession. And I mean, that goes back. And that goes all the way back through ancient times and into the age of vivisection, et cetera.
Well, and leads to us having characters nowadays like Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah.
You know, like that, it all kind of makes sense when you trace the history of it. Another, example you'll see a lot of here is a book called Destinies of the Soul.
Oh, this is a good one.
This is a book by writer, Arsène Houssay, I believe is how you pronounce it. And it was given to his friend, Dr. Ludovic Bouland in the 1880s. Now, Bouland is thought to have bound the book himself in the skin of an unclaimed female mental patient who died of natural causes. He apparently also bound a 16th century text on virginity in human skin, although we don't know where that human skin came from. So, this guy's like setting off my creepy meter.
But these books are interesting, especially, well, really both of them, because these are the first ones that really feel like they could belong in a Lovecraftian library. The one book in particular, Destinies of the Soul, 1880, focuses on the afterlife and theories of the human soul. And the book is inscribed with this. This book is bound in human skin parchment on which no ornament has been stamped to preserve its elegance. A book about the human soul deserved to have a human covering. I had kept this piece of human skin taken from the back of a woman.
Yeah, this Bouland just really, of all the people in here, he's the one who really just kind of like squicked me out, gave me a, what do you call it?
Chill bumps?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now that would be interesting to have a book, I guess a book of horror where not only is it bound in human skin, but you somehow get the chill bumps down there.
Goosebumps.
Yeah.
You get a copy of Goosebumps bound in human skin with Goosebumps. There you go. So there's lots of examples. Robert's got a couple more here, but the Mutter Museum, which is in Philadelphia, at the College of Physicians, that's a place where you can see a couple of these. We've mentioned this on the show before. There's even a librarian there who specializes specifically in human skin books.
Oh, wow.
There's other places like California, Berkeley's Bancroft Library, Brown University, and the National Library of Australia. These are all libraries where you can go and ask to see these books. The one at Brown is the one that I heard was the last known to be made. It was apparently bound in 1893, although, you know, from what we're hearing, maybe there is also some later on up until World War II. The binder, though, in 1893 didn't have enough human skin for the book. So what they did was they took the skin and they kind of halved it. The front half uses the outer layer of skin and the back and the spine are made from the inner layer of skin.
All right. So I have a list of some other books here. I am probably not going to mention them all. So let me just scan through and see which ones bear mention. There was an English physician, bibliophile, and classicist named Anthony Askew. in the 18th century. He apparently had had one anatomy textbook bound in human flesh. Another English doctor, John Hunter, from more or less the same time period, he had a copy of the book Abelung über die Hautkrankheiten, bound in, quote, healthy cured human skin.
No, at least it was healthy.
Yeah. You want to make sure it's healthy.
Yeah. You don't want, like, jaundice books.
Yeah. And, you know, there are other accounts of 18th century doctors just handing off other weird things to each other made from human skin. French botanist, naturalist, Valmont de Beaumaire reported that, famed Parisian surgeon M. Sue, I could not find any additional information on one M. Sue, but okay. Apparently gave a pair of slippers made from human skin to a museum, and apparently had given the museum also a belt of human skin with nipples on it.
Okay.
Now, in an American example, Joseph Leidy. Have we touched on Leidy yet?
No.
He had a copy of his own elementary treatise on human anatomy, 1861, bound in flesh. The inscription inside reads, quote, "The leather with which this book is bound is human skin from a soldier who died during the Great Southern Rebellion."
Hmm.
And by the way, in 1846, Leidy became the first person ever to use a microscope to solve a murder mystery.
Well, there you go. You know, he had all that experience handling human skin, although it seems like the book was published after his microscope discovery.
Here's another curious incident that came up. This was a young German law student named Ernst Kaufmann, and he apparently lusted for fame, and he made a collection of 200 woodcuts titled 200 Blumentmanner, and he had it bound in his own skin after death, and it wound up in the library of Dr. Matthew Wood of Philadelphia.
See, so I could see doing that. I could see, like, when I passed away, saying, like, I don't know, put a copy of Stephen King's The Shining in my skin, you know, and leave it to Robert Lamb, like something like that. It doesn't really bother me that much, but taking somebody else's skin, especially when they're your patient.
Yeah, that's where it gets. If it's purely consensual, I'm fine with it. But you get into a weird area with all these other physicians we've been talking about.
I can't help but just picturing Pinhead from the Hellraiser movies.
Oh, yeah.
You know, oh, what sights you'll see.
Here's another sight. This one comes, this was the French apparently ordered the execution of a notorious criminal that was known only as Campe.
Okay.
C-A-M-P-I. And he was to be flayed after death and the tanned hide be used to, quote, bind a volume containing the complete story of his life and exploits. That sounds a bit nuts to me, and there's apparently no evidence that this was actually carried out in a literal sense.
Mm.
But I guess it is kind of poetic, right? Because what are any of us but a book bound in human
flesh?
There
you go.
Or we like to think of ourselves
that way.
This
is the thing. So what we're getting is, like, a lot of these are French examples. They're French physicians, and they love, like, the meta nature of binding books about anatomy or biology or human virginity in human skin.
Now, here's another example that came from that Thompson source that I mentioned earlier. A bookbinder reportedly prepared several human skin volumes for a Dr. V, this is another French doctor, including a volume that had nipples on the front. And V apparently was also was a big fan of tattooed flesh, and he obtained human skin tattooed with two knights duking it out, and he ordered a copy of The Three Musketeers bound in it.
Wow, I can't imagine how bad that must look, because, like, you know, I've had friends who've gotten kind of crummy tattoos in their 20s, and then, like, now we're in our 40s going into 50s, and it's like, that's getting a little blurry, you know?
Yeah.
But then, like, you take it off and you cure it and tan it and go through that whole process. I can't imagine that you'd really be able to see the knights fighting each other all that well.
Yeah, like, I remember seeing old Navy tattoos on some old guy's shoulders in church when I was a kid, and you basically couldn't tell what they were anymore.
Right, yeah, they're just, like, kind of blobs.
So before we take another break and come back and discuss the science, I want to say that I feel like the more we looked at these examples, the more I felt like I was answering my own question about the lack of skin-bound books in, say, the works of H.P. Lovecraft. Because maybe, even though there is one mention of a tanned human hide in a book, like, maybe he and other writers of his time were a little more aware of the fact that books bound in human flesh were not that, were usually not that fancy, were not that occult and dark and secretive a thing. It was more of this kind of boring, normalized thing that kind of rich, uppity physicians did.
Yeah. So, you know, from my knowledge of horror literature, the ones that immediately pop to mind, and using the term literature is strong here, but the EC comics and the kind of creepy and eerie comics from the 50s going up into the 70s, this was a common theme, I think, because they're playing off the Burke and Hare thing of like, you know, oh no, like there's a classic story, that I think, Jack Davis drew. I think there was like a butcher who was like procuring dead bodies for a client or something like that. Or maybe it was like, you know, there were multiple stories that were like this. Like one of them was like a people who owned a funeral home and business was low. And so like, so there were all these like weird stories of just procuring dead bodies for various menacing means. And oftentimes they end up as books or something like that at the end of these stories. But you're right. Like, that was like a good, I don't know, 30 years after Lovecraft was working.
Yeah. So maybe you just had to, there had to be a certain amount of time that passed before this could become cool again.
Right. It kind of like was outside of the popular consciousness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just a theory anyway.
Well, let's take another break. And when we get back, let's get into the science of how you actually figure out if your book is bound in human flesh.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
All right, we're back. So as we discussed, human hide isn't that different from other hides. And ultimately, we have a book that is allegedly bound in human flesh. How can you tell?
Yeah, well, the way to identify human leather, okay, first of all, it obviously has different pore sizes and shapes than a pig or calf skin, right? Apparently, it also has a waxy smell that is sometimes used to identify fraudulent books. But when human skin is tanned, its DNA traces are mostly destroyed, so it's much harder to identify a specific donor. Usually, historians have to turn to inscriptions and historical records, right? We've mentioned this with several of the examples. Like on the inside of the book, it says, yada, 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 this book was bound in so-and-so's skin. But when you really need to know, you get a scientist and you turn to a method called peptide mass fingerprinting. And this identifies proteins to create a PMF, that's a fingerprint basically, that allows analysts to identify the source of the flesh. Now at Harvard, they did this with the Destinies of the Soul book we were talking about. And they confirmed, yes, it is human skin. Though there is a chance that it could be a closely related primate like a gibbon or a great ape. But it's definitely not sheep, cattle, or goat. So we'll get into this in a minute, but they can narrow it down to sort of like the family.
You know, even if the book were just bound in the hide of a gibbon, I mean, that's still impressive.
I think it would be creepy. Yeah. They're 99% sure in this one case because they followed up the PMF with a liquid chromatography tandem mass spectrometry. And they did this to determine the order of the amino acids that are in the sample. These are basically the building blocks of each of the peptides that are different in each species. Harvard has done similar testings on books they thought were human skin, but instead they turned out to be sheepskin. And here's an example. There was this book that it's referred to the coloring as being, quote, subdued yellow with a sporadic brown and black splotches like an old banana. And they thought it was human skin. It was supposedly the skin of a man named Jonas Wright, who was flayed alive by an African tribe who then turned him into a book. And it's a total fake.
That sounds fake. Like, cause yeah. When you think African tribe, you don't think, oh, well, modern European bookbinding.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. Like the minute I read about that, I was like, of all of these examples here, that's the one that just sounds like kind of just like this racist stereotype example, right?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of fakes out there too, including one that was purported to be made from the skin of Crispus Attucks. Attucks being, an African American man who was, one of the first victims, if not the first, at the Boston Massacre leading to the Revolutionary War. This is where we enter into the anthropodermic book project. So this is the team of scientists that I've been referring to. Their goal is to create a census of the alleged anthropodermic books in the world. And they say their method is easy, that it's inexpensive. In fact, it costs less than $100 per book and it's authoritative. And they started in 2014. Their current count as of September 2016 is they have seen examined 47 alleged books. 30 are in the process of being tested. 18 have been confirmed as human skin and 12 have been confirmed as not human skin.
Huh. So the majority though.
Yeah.
Have turned out to actually be human
turns
skin.
Out. Okay. Yeah. They use this PMF method that I referred to, and they explain it further. They say the technique uses enzymatic digestion of extracted collagen to cut the protein at specific amino acid sites that form a mixture of peptides. And basically, they place the sample in an enzyme bath that digests the collagen in it down into peptides. Now, each mammal has a unique amino acid sequence in our collagen, so the mixture of peptides is like a unique fingerprint. They also use matrix-assisted laser temperature, desorption, ionization, time of flight mass spectrometry.
Whoa.
The acronym for that is MALDI.
Oh, good old MALDI.
Much easier to say. And they use this to analyze these peptide mixtures for specific marker icons. Now, this is what they say. They say they prefer the PMF method to DNA analysis because it quickly differentiates the hominid family from things like sheep, goats, pigs, cow, and deer, the usual kinds of skins that are used for bookbinding. It is very unlikely that a book from the 19th century would be bound in the skin of another member of the great ape family. So they feel pretty comfortable if it's an older, rare book saying, well, if it's part of the hominid family, it's more likely that it's a human being than it is a gibbon.
Yeah, because as we discussed, part of the whole reason for books being bound in human flesh is you had human flesh just sort of sitting around.
Yeah.
And people made use of it.
How difficult was it to procure a gibbon back then?
Yeah.
You know, they also prefer collagen testing to DNA because it lasts longer, especially if the skin is preserved through tanning or mummification. Collagen is really tough and it can be analyzed long after death. So the thing that they point out here about DNA, this is something that Joe and I, talked about in our forensics episode, is that DNA can lead to false positives. For instance, like when a person is handling the book, maybe their DNA gets accidentally magnified, right? They do, however, recognize that PMF cannot tell whether the skin came from, for instance, a man or a woman, where the person might have come from and who their relatives were, while DNA can. Another method they discount is something called follicle pattern recognition. And the premise here is that human skin patterns are arranged in different shapes than other animals. So people would, you know, compare these patterns and say, well, that's human skin, that's sheepskin. They say, though, this is pretty subjective, especially if the pattern gets changed by processing, dyeing, and stretching of the skin. And they say they only need tiny, tiny samples. Something visible under 30 times magnification is sufficient material for analysis. And this is comparably the size of a needle prick. So what they do is they began the ABP team, and they have been confirming books as not being human skin or being human skin. One of the examples is the Bibliotheca Politica that was at Juniata College in Pennsylvania. And it was thought to be anthropodermic, and it fascinated students, especially during Halloween. So they would come into the library. They'd want to all look at it. After the PMF test, though, turns out it was sheepskin. So not every institution actually wants to go public with these results. Some of them are hiring these folks to come in and do the tests, but they're not releasing the results because the mystery of the human skin bound books, you know, that's attracting visitors.
Yeah. I mean, especially given how ultimately unimpressive some of these books are on their own. If
right.
you take away the idea that they're bound in human flesh, what are you left with?
Yeah. Just some like old court papers.
Now, fast forward to today, and generally you're not going to find much in the way of human-bound books anymore.
Yeah.
However, one interesting example that I came across was a proposal for a skin book made from synthetic flesh for aspiring tattoo artists.
Oh.
This was apparently made the rounds in the news back in 2015. Tattoo Art Magazine commissioned a Brazilian ad agency to help bring this idea to fruition.
Okay.
And so the idea would be that they would have, it would be a little like a moleskin book, except it's human skin book, with pages of, of human skin to, you know, test out your tattooing skills.
Okay, so like it the inside of the book is like your instructions on how to be a tattoo artist, and then when you're practicing with your tattoo machine, you're doing it on the cover of your book. Kind of like when we used to, like, as kids, wrap our books up in grocery bags and then we'd draw all over them.
No, actually this one would have been like all the pages inside would have been blank pages of skin.
Oh,
I think that was the proposal.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay.
Now,
That seems like quite a feat.
This is like a lot of these things that have come out, like the Alexander McQueen thing where someone's saying, hey, we could do this. Let's do it. If it actually gets made, that's another thing. But it does – the advancing technology of being able to, you know, clone human skin, grow human tissue away from a human body, it does bring the possibility of human-bound books back. Like, I can kind of imagine a future – where you'll have special hardbound editions of certain books that'll come out, and you'll be able to get it in I mean, take, for instance, Stephen King, you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
So one day Steve will not be with us anymore. It's not inconceivable that there will be a sample of his tissue somewhere, and someone will be given permission to clone that tissue.
Yeah.
And you could buy copies. You could buy the Stephen King library, and each book would be bound in Steve's skin.
Those super, I don't know if you've seen these like super fancy Cemetery Dance editions of his books,
yeah,
that are like, you know, really nicely bound. But yeah, like even further than that. Well, I mean, like given research that we've done for other episodes on this show, we're not conceivably that far away from being able to 3D print human skin.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as long as you're not, again, like my line is like, if you're taking it from somebody without asking them, that's not cool. I guess I'm okay with it if you're making human skin based on somebody else's DNA, but they don't have a say in it. I think I'm okay with that. And of course, I'm okay. You want to take my skin? I got to think about this now. It's really got to change my whole will. What book's going to be bound in my skin and who gets it?
Yeah, it's a tough decision. Like, do you want your own book bound in your human skin, or is that being too
selfish?
Seems
a little pretentious.
Yeah. So you got to pick something that you just really admire and you admire enough to actually have part of your body wrapped around it.
Yeah.
Well, we'd certainly love to hear from any of our listeners out there who have thoughts on that. What book would you submit your flesh for? Would you want to be utilized in the binding for? We'd love to hear from you.
What part of your body do you think would be best for it? I guess I guess that the Mary Lynch doctor maybe had it right. The thigh seems like a good place to start.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I've never really been in that situation.
You know, earlier I know we talked about tattoos not aging well and questioned how these books would work.
Yeah.
If it were possible to preserve it, and I'm not sure how that really works, how the tanning process affects tattoo quality, I could see tattooed flesh making for a nice book cover on something.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like if you took like a full sleeve,
yeah,
that could be really cool looking. So if you want to share your pictures of your human skin bound books or maybe your tattoos that you would like to use to cover some books with in the future, there are lots of places you can get in touch with us at. You can send us those. We're all over social media. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on Tumblr, and we are on Instagram. And you can always visit us at stufftoblowyourmind.com.
That's right. That's the mothership. That's where you'll find all the podcast episodes, including the various playing episodes that we mentioned earlier.
Yep.
I'll try and link to all of those on the landing page for this episode, as well as some of the outside sources we've mentioned.
And as always, if you want to just write us the old-fashioned way, we are at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring? but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.